Donna Leon's memoir, Wandering Through Life, gave her fans a tour through her life from childhood in New Jersey to adventures in China and Iran to her love of Venice and opera. Nowhere, however, did she discuss her writing life. Well, she solves that problem in the new book of essays, Backstage, Stories of a Writing Life, where Donna reveals her admiration for and inspiration from the great crime novelists of our time, examining their approach to storytelling as she dissects her favorite books. She expresses her love for Charles Dickens and Great Expectations and her appreciation for Sir Walter Scott's generosity of spirits, and she chronicles the amount of research that she undertakes to be able to present her characters and work authentically. Again, the name of the book, Backstage, Stories of a Writing Life. It's a great pleasure to welcome Donna Leon to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. What a delight to have you on the program.
It's a delight for me.
Thank you very much for being here. Was this something you always thought you would write?
No. I never plan anything. It seems that I have been reasonably successful, but I never had that idea of working hard to have a happy future, blah, 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 be successful. I just wanted to have a lot of fun, and I have.
Mm-hmm.
But no, none of the moves that I made all through my life, starting back in when I was in my 20s, was something that I sat down and thought about. It was like an impulse buy. Oh, yeah, okay, I'll go to Iran. Where is it again? I didn't know where Iran was.
And what led to that? Let's use that as an example. So what led you there and opened up that opportunity to you?
I think, and I hope this doesn't make them spin in their graves, I think it's from my parents' habitual negligence in that I was taught, like little Joe in Bleak House, when the judge asks him, "What do you know, boy? What do you know? What do you know?" And he's terrified. Little kid says, "A broom's for sweeping." He's a street sweeper. "A
Sure.
broom's for sweeping, and never tell a lie." And that's similar to what my parents taught me: never tell a lie, and your job is your job. Do it well. And other than that, they were not involved with, I'm sure that they were very concerned with, but they weren't involved with the choices that I made.
How mired do you believe your choices were in a curiosity?
Yeah, I think my choices are very odd. That a woman in the 70s, not knowing where or what Iran was, would sign a contract to go and teach helicopter pilots English in Iran, and then go and stay there for 4 years. But once I had been there for a time and I liked it, it wasn't a question of saying, oh, I have to finish my contract. I was having a lot of fun, and so I wanted to stay.
Was writing always a part of the equation?
Yeah, it always was. And this is good luck because of the time of my birth. I was raised writing letters. Remember letters? Remember postage stamps?
Yes.
Remember going to the post office? Do you remember the intercontinental thing, the airplane?
Airmail.
Airmail, those one sheets of blue that you could write on, and then you had to lick
That's
them,
right.
And assemble them and send them off, and a week later the person you were communicating with would get them, and then they would write you, and that would take a week or two to get back to you. And so since I spent a long time out of the country, and I left lots of friends in both places, I was always writing letters saying, "Dear Guy, dear Joe, dear Peggy, this is what I've been doing," because I wanted to stay in touch with them. Because at the time, people did not make telephone calls. In the years I started, I think in 69, I started commuting to Italy. I think in 5 years, maybe 10, I never made a phone call to the United States to call my parents every 15 minutes and say, "Hi, I'm fine. We're looking at the Colosseum and the ice cream's great." I just wrote to my parents and said, "Hi, Ma. Hi, Dad. I'm fine. We did this. We did that. I did this. I did that. Much love, Donna. And risk your tongue by licking the sharp edges to fold them." And then waiting another week until I got a letter from them, and then I'd answer their letter. It was normal because we didn't have access to telephones, and we certainly didn't have telefonini.
So those were dispatches of this is what's happening, this is what I observed, and this is what's on my mind. When did fiction start to creep in of telling stories?
I suppose coming back from Europe, because if you're living in New Jersey, you really don't have too much to tell about what's going on that you didn't in the 60s. I would tell people about, oh yeah, one of the real popular stories was I went with a woman with whom I'm still in contact, Anita Vantuno. She went to university with me, and then after about 6 months, she wanted to go to Italy to paint, and her mother wouldn't let her go unless she took someone with her, because this was the 60s and we were respectable girls. So we went off to Italy, and we'd communicate with our parents. There's a happy ending. Anita married the first guy that she fell in love with in Italy and had four kids, and we're still in touch after all of this time.
You mentioned Bleak House a moment ago. You write about Dickens and Great Expectations in the essay collection. What is it, do you think, that Charles Dickens was able to do that struck such a chord with you?
I think it struck not only with me, but it struck readers for a couple hundred years. So he's obviously doing something right.
Right.
And I think what he does is what many novelists fail at. He can be dead serious. There's a scene in Great Expectations that I can't read unless I want to cry. The death of Magwitch. It's towards the end of the book.
Yes.
I've read it, I don't know how many times, but when I read it and have this scene of a young man's discovery of who the person who has been caring for him and loving him for 30 years is, and the other man dies in his arms. He's a criminal who went off to Australia. So there's something in the pathos of that scene that destroys me, because it's frozen in time. I'm sure that guys who went off to the various American wars of the last century died in the arms of their companions, and their companions still cry after 40 or 50 years, because there's something in that not being fake anymore. You can reveal your feelings. I think that is something that's very, very powerfully evident in Dickens' novels. There are endless scenes also where he's a great moralist, although he was really a horrid man, and had a sense, he understood the ethical system of the English at that time, and he wrote in respect of it, so that if you want to learn how to be a good person or how to be a bad person, read Dickens. He'll tell you everything.
I was in eighth or ninth grade, and Great Expectations was on the reading list, and they were giving us an abridged version. And my mother, who was a librarian, I thought she was going to have a coronary when they gave us the abridged version.
Yeah, good for her. Not for the coroner.
No. So immediately went out and got me the full volume. And it just, that is one of those books that I think forever sticks with you. It's hard to shake, and something that I feel compelled to read over and over again.
And he doesn't preach. This, I think, is one of the great things about Dickens. that he simply shows a situation in which this person did that, and this person did that, and this person said this, and this person said that, and this is the result. And very often the result is chaos, because the people have made bad choices or done bad things. I adore him. I'm waiting for it to be time to reread Lee Cass, but I've got a couple of years before I will have forgotten it all.
Donna Leon is our guest. The name of the new book is Backstage: Stories of a Writing Life. You write about crime novelists in the book, Ross McDonald, Ruth Rendell. These are people who meant a lot to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, what was it about their writing that was so inspirational?
They both are brilliant writers. Their English prose is stealable. I envy them their talent with not simple, but with elegant prose. They both are masters of that. And they are masters of understatement. So Ruth would throw something like this at you when she's talking about one of the bad characters in Joan Smith. She's a wacko. This is really a crazy person. And she says it is very calmly and in nice, elegant, not complicated, but elegant English. It is difficult to know what Joan Smith would have done with children if she had had them. Pause. Eaten them, perhaps. And she slips this in. The narrator never raises his or her voice, never yells at people, never rants, never preaches, simply goes ahead with this absolutely flat, correct, beautifully punctuated English. But she lets these whamming statements come out. And Ross McDonald does the same thing. He writes a very simple prose, but he uses it beautifully. And I don't have one of his books here with me, or I'd read a sentence from him. But any sentence he wrote is good.
When it comes to your writing and your characters, what have you found to be not the key to it, but at least what you enjoy doing when you have a series and you have a character and it's something that you've invested in, of what you enjoy about creating that world?
What I like are the funny bits, I have to confess. The narrator of the Brunetti books will sneak up behind you and hit you over the head with a phrase or with a comment on a person's character. But I don't know whether I took that from Ruth or it seeped in by osmosis. But that tone is what I find enchanting in other writers, particularly in Ruth and in Ross McDonald.
When you have it, it doesn't make the next book any easier, right? But it is comfortable in the sense that you're in a world that you're familiar with, I would assume.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a very limited world because it's about a city that now has fewer than 50,000 people. How much crime can you have?
And how do you meet that challenge?
Well, people are still going to do bad things. People are still going to be greedy or violent or name the vices. They're not going to go out of business because there are fewer people. And there is the constant influx of tourists and of foreigners who decide that they want to go and live in Venice. So there's always going to be a flux of characters. I won't have any difficulty with the characters. What I will have difficulty with is, and am having difficulty with, is how to kill people. I remember Ruth and I at lunch, this must be 25 years ago, where we talked about how we killed people and how difficult it was to find a new way. She says, well, yes, she said, I don't like guns. There's too much to know about them, and they're always going off at the wrong time. And then at the end of lunch, when we were leaving, she paused and she said, in the end, there's really nothing like a good push down the steps. She was always dropping things like that. God, she was funny.
So what does it say about us while you and Ruth and countless others are working so hard to entertain us with these incredible crime novels? What is it about us that is so fascinated by
evil?
About evil? About the idea of a hand on someone's back being lunged forward down a staircase?
I don't know. I don't know enough about the ethics of other large social groups, so I don't know whether Indonesians have the same interest in criminal behavior, or whether the Malaysians do, or whether the Argentinians do. But there seems to be something in the English, in which I include the Americans, that is fascinated with crime and pain and murder and viciousness. I like to think that I've kept most of that out of the books. There aren't many violent scenes in the book. One example I would give is I wrote one of the early books about a meat factory. I had a slaughterhouse. I had a scene in the slaughterhouse. And once two readers said, "Oh, that's horrible. How could you make all of those horrible descriptions of what was going on in that blood? It was just so awful." And I said, "Girls, wake up. Just reread the passage. It's not violent." And I went back as well and found that in the passage, there were noises. There were moos and there were loud noises from animals scraping the ground with their feet. And then there's one scene where I describe they shoved the pig to the side and there was a different kind of noise. So it's just, it's teasing the reader, and readers very quickly will fill up any holes that you've left.
That's what we so often say about radio, of the theater of the mind.
Yeah. Lamont Cranston. Remember Lamont Cranston?
Yes.
Do you remember Lamont Cranston?
The shadow knows.
Shadow, yes. Yeah. Who knows? Yes. The shadow knows. Oh, that was a wonderful program.
But yes, your imagination can do far more damage than than an image. When writing these essays, did you do this for yourself, or was this an exercise you gave yourself?
No, actually, it's an exercise in greed. My publisher, whom I adore, Diogenes, my Swiss publisher, and my agent are little angel pies. They have made my career. I was asked maybe 20 years ago, often by magazines and newspapers in Germany and in Switzerland primarily, because those are the biggest markets for me, if I would write short pieces about where I've been, what I've been doing, what I've been thinking about. So I wrote them as one-offs, and I didn't keep them. But Diogenes did. My editor kept them. And when I told them that the Brunetti books were not going to come bang, 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 one a year anymore, they went into the archive. And my beloved editor, who was the best in the planet, on the planet, they found lots of these things that I didn't remember writing. The one about the opera with what was her name? It was a Donizetti opera. I can't remember which one. I wrote a review, and most of these pieces are funny. Well, yes. To me, they're funny.
Oh, they are funny.
Oh, good. Thank you.
Wonderful.
Because I stole from Dickens that idea of the normal, normal, normal that gets disrupted. Someone pulls a chair out from under you, and this wasn't supposed to happen. The two women at the luncheon weren't supposed to be prostitutes, and they weren't supposed to be putting their hands on me, I thought. So there's very often that surprise that is explained and then becomes normal, but people laugh. And I like doing these pieces. I liked it very, very much. And I'd like to do some more now.
It's such a fun book. It's Backstage Stories of a Writing Life. The book is published by Atlantic Monthly Press. Donna Leon, what a great pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you so much for sharing with
Thank
us.
You.
An absolute delight to speak with you. Be well.
And with you as well.
Thank you so
because
much.
You, Take care. Because you laugh at my jokes.
Very funny. Thank you very much. Be well.
Thank you.
Take care.
Ciao, ciao.
Bye-bye. Donna Leon is the author of Backstage Stories of a Writing Life. It's published by Atlantic Monthly Press. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.